Hello and a big welcome to 119 Hulkcast. Well, you know, we're going for nearly 120 at the moment. I'm James Rushton, your host as usual. I'm joined by Daniel Raza today. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm doing well, James. How you doing, man? I'm good.
All good, man. Yeah, I've been hosting the Hulkcast for about 10 episodes now. You know, it was Robert and Jack before, but yeah, I get to speak to delightful people by yourself, and it's going to go for a long time if this carries on, mate.
No, man, appreciate it. The podcast's always very fun to get involved in, and I think it's great to... I think it's great to be able to talk all things Villa for a good amount of time.
Yeah. I mean, we've hit an hour so far in the last two. And I mean, we haven't like waffled. I mean, if we get any feedback that we've waffled or, you know, went off on tangents, then yeah, fair enough. But I feel like we've just been hitting the points.
Do you know what, right? You can get a good hour's in about Midlands football, right? You can get that on the radio. But what you also get on the radio is long conversations about Tony Pulis that we do not care about. So
yeah, no.
Here we go. We've got one all hour, or maybe even a little bit less, dedicated to Aston Villa, and we're going to go through absolutely everything that there is to talk about, aren't we, James?
Yeah, I mean, everything that we get to talk about is going to be 100% Villa. We're not going to go on Blues, Wolves, even the opposition. We won't even focus much on them. We'll talk about the players, a good plan. We've got especially a good moment coming up when we talk about Wednesday, you know, 18 seconds into a game. We'll get onto that. But yeah, all things Villa today. So let's get it started. How did we do midweek? We travelled up to Preston, Lancashire, expecting a big win. You called a 4-0 victory, 4-1 victory,
didn't
you?
Yeah, I called a 4 victory. And I was watching the game with my dad as well, actually. Watching it on the telly, obviously. But you know, I thought that we would kick on after scoring those two goals, but it was still comfortable, wasn't it? It was still comfortable. It might as well have been 4-0 or 4-1. The only thing that I perhaps would have said is that maybe a side like Wolverhampton Wanderers maybe would have gone on and pushed on and got that 4-1 result or that 5-0 result. And that was the only thing that slightly disappointed me. But yeah, it was comfortable as I expected.
Yeah, 2-0 win away may as well be a 4-0 win. It's, you know, it's a big win. A big win away from home. You know, no threat from Preston whatsoever. We did amazingly well, I feel, in that game. It was 2-0. I'll take that any day.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the thing that was a bit funny to me about that game. Well, okay. Yeah, I don't know if funny's the right word. But we said, obviously, at the start of the game that Preston were missing defenders. They were missing big players. Huntington was out. You know, there are the centre-backs as well who you know, have been starting for them all season, also out. They started off the game with the... You could tell that they were lacking confidence, obviously, because they'd just come off that first home defeat as well. And then mid-game, like almost halfway through, I think it was straight actually at half-time, we saw that more of the defenders got injured. So it certainly wasn't good for them at all. So it was routine for us, and there was no way that they could have troubled us, really.
One quite strange thing. I mean, I felt I was stumbling last week when I said, oh, Alan Hutton might start at left-back. We thought there's no possibility, right? Neil Taylor's going to come back in. Alan Hutton's been holding that left-back position down. As I know, he started against Preston left back and he went on to the next match as left back. What's happening there?
Yeah, I thought what was funny was that I think after the game as well, because it was such a controlled performance from him, such a fantastic performance from him at left back. He was great. His positioning was on. He cut inside very well. When I say that, you know, he linked very well to the midfield. Hourihane was finding... apologies, that's my phone over there. Sorry about that. Hourihane was obviously finding a lot of passes coming in from Alan Hutton as well throughout the game. But I thought what was really funny was we saw fans on Twitter, you know, coming up with some hilarious jokes throughout it as well. Basically, I saw one saying that Alan Hutton, the reason why he's looked so poor for the whole duration of his time at Aston Villa is because he's been a left back all along.
I mean, yeah, and he's not allowed to use his feet, so he can't actually play any football. And as we know, he's a substandard actual footballer. He's a great athlete, but his footballing ability leaves much to be desired.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, is he...
Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, is he Villa's left-back? Yeah, is he Villa's left-back going forward?
Well, yeah, I mean... Well, no, he's not. he did well over there. He did well at left-back. He's good. He's good as somebody filling in. He is a right-back, right? Let's be honest. Perhaps the reason he looked good is, you know, perhaps the reason... his crosses aren't so effective on the right-hand side because he's better, obviously, swinging them in rather than swinging them out. But maybe that's his thing. But no, I think the thing with Alan Hutton is he's obviously put a lot of focus into his performance at left-back. He's clearly been doing a lot of work with his positioning over there. I just wish that when he's playing right-back, he can be a little bit more consistent at times. I think one thing you see with Alan Hutton is he's got a lot of potential in the sense that he can pull off a fantastic performance. He can pull off a very controlled performance and win us games in some senses, you know, when he is on his game. But he, a lot of our players over the last few years or so, seem to have long lapses of concentration where they do lose track of small things like positioning. And I think that's been his problem in the past. As far as him being our main left back, you got to give it back to Neil, man.
Yeah, I mean, a 2-0 victory away at Preston. We'll hope for some changes in the future. There's two big moments. Speak about those two goals, of course. First, the corner from Snodgrass. That was a peach of a ball to James Chester. He found it too easy to head in. James Chester's first goal of the season, I believe. It was coming a long time coming. And Robert Snodgrass, you know, he's the architect of that brilliant corner. Brilliant corner.
Yeah, nice to see both John Terry and James Chester getting on the goal sheet. Getting on the goal sheet over the last few weeks. And Robert Snodgrass showing us essentially why we bought him. We've lacked a winger. We've lacked, in fact, I'd say even a playmaker who can deliver that kind of ball, who can pinpoint those kinds of free kicks and those kinds of set pieces and find the big man in the box like James Chester or like even Jonathan Kadjia at times. And Robert Snodgrass with that sweet left foot, he's showing why we did buy him. Perhaps we can see a few more assists from him in the next few weeks. But it was a fantastic delivery. And he is capable of these things. You've got to remember that with Robert Snodgrass. Not too long ago, he was involved in a massive transfer fee over to West Ham.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go too far, but that is a world-class left foot. He's got, you know, whatever's gone wrong in his career for him to reach the highest level consistently, fair enough. But, you know, that left foot of his is something special. The way he played that ball in, that's a goal every time. If he can pull that off every time, it's a goal every time. Brilliant ball in. Second goal for Villa come from him himself, Mr. Snodgrass. What do you think of that effort?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, this is what I mean. He was on point today. He was on point. I'm trying to remember exactly how that ball went in.
It was either Onuma or Davis won it deep. I believe it was Onuma because I think Davis ran in late. And so as Davis is running in, Snodgrass is just unmarked in the middle of the box.
Yeah, that was it.
That was it. Perfect. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I seem to remember Keenan Davis being an absolute nuisance. And essentially, there was the Preston defenders again. It was poor defending. You know, they did not mark Robert Snodgrass at all. He was absolutely free. And the defenders obviously looked very confused. But what I will say is that it's good to see Robert Snodgrass performing well, because he's the kind of player that is a game changer. He's the kind of player that we have lacked over the last few years. We haven't had that kind of midfielder, but now what we've got is Adoma on form and Robert Snodgrass, and I'd like to see these guys maybe emulate Ashley Young and Stuart Downing in the years to come. Probably won't happen, but it reminded me of that. Finally, a good sort of left-footed right-sided midfielder and a good right-footed left-sided midfielder in our team.
Well, the hard work is certainly there. Let's just see if the talent is. As for the man of the match in this match, it could only be one man, and he didn't get on the score sheet, but it was Keenan Davis. Absolutely everywhere. Lone striker, linked the play up perfectly, and was a real handful. He probably should have been sent off. He was getting into a few spats, and that was after he had a yellow card. Steve Bruce made the wise decision to take him off. But yeah, Davis is the man of the match. Can you argue with that at all?
I would have given it to Snodgrass. Honestly, I mean, that's purely because of how well he played and how much he influenced the game. And he did absolutely take the mickey out of the Preston defence. But I have to say, yeah, fair play to Keenan Davis. He started up top on his own, didn't he? He was Onuma right behind him, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he was leading in the midfield behind him, spearheading.
Right, exactly. And always, when you have got a player like him at his sort of age, 20, I believe he is at the moment, 19 or 20 years old, and you're asking him to lead that attack on his own. And let's be honest, he hasn't got an established playmaker behind him. For him to pull out that kind of performance and still control that game, and him himself as well, taking the mickey out of his defenders. Like I said, that goal that Snodgrass scored, he was causing an absolute nuisance. I have to hand it to him. Keenan Davis is looking the real deal, and he's constantly putting in these performances. And even if he isn't scoring goals, as long as he's doing something, as long as he's drawing defenders in, as long as he's being a nuisance, you know, he deserves to be playing, and kudos to him for that. But as you say, it was a good performance from him, and He was an absolute hassle for them to deal with.
Yeah, more on Keenan Davis. A story broke this week that him and his agent were in a negotiating quote-unquote battle with Aston Villa. It's since come out from Keith Wyness and some of Keenan Davis's friends and ex-colleagues. That's not the truth. That's simply negotiations about a contract. Apparently, from what the story said, Villa were refusing to pay Davis and his party the $20,000 a week he was asking for. Pay the man. Surely, pay the man.
Yeah, but you've got to hide it just a little bit, haven't you? You know, you've got to
have something under your sleeve, haven't you? You can't just give everyone what they want. Eventually, that might be the case that everyone in the team gets what they want, but it's certainly got to go through stages of whether it's the right deal, whether his actual value to the team is $20,000 a week. I think it's more than that, personally. But yeah, this is how negotiations work, and somehow the story's come out. It's been, you know, it's had cold water thrown on it. And unfortunately, I think it might be the work of the agent or the party trying to make something happen. But yeah, I think he's gonna get the contract sorted. If Hepburn Murphy and Callum O'Hare can get theirs sorted, the main man Keenan Davis can.
Yeah, but surely. What would have happened if we'd given Nathan Delfonso a twenty grand contract? Do you remember him? He was our last young striker who was really turning it on. Played well for a few weeks. You know, got under the opposition's skin on a consistent basis for a few months, in fact, as well. Scored a few goals. What happened to him? He dropped off, right?
Yeah, he's at Swindon now. So it didn't really, it didn't really turn out brilliantly for him. No, sorry to Swindon. I'm not slacking you off at all, but yeah, it's not a Premier League football, exactly.
And did you hear what I'm saying, though? I mean, like, he's a young striker. Yeah, all right, he's performing well. He scored a few goals over the last few weeks. Great. But he's not Marcus Rashford. Rashford, right? He's a young striker who's come through at the Championship level. It's not the Premier League, right? And this isn't something to, you know, to basically crap on the Championship, essentially. But my point is, you do get strikers like him coming through. It does happen every now and then. But you don't know if they are the real deal until they've been putting it on for a consistent basis. There's no point talking about contracts yet. It's not even January. Give it till January. See what happens at that point, right? If it comes to February, albeit, you know, it will be a little bit late, but we'll still have plenty of time. There's no rush to give this guy a contract. Do you know what I mean? He's got to keep it going. He's got to have something to play for. I mean, I remember when Andy Wyman got given a contract. He absolutely turned off, didn't he, as soon as he got given it?
Yeah, it's a motivating factor. It's the carrot on the end of the stick, isn't it? I mean, there was that one year when Wyman was playing out his skin and Inter Milan came in for him. What's happening now? I mean, he's a good player, but, you know, people were circling around him. The big clubs were circling. And then when the form drops off, they drop off as well.
Was that Wyman?
Yeah, that was Wyman, yeah.
Flipping it, man. Yeah, no, but I can count like on my fingers, you know, the amount of young promising strikers we had come through who have dropped off at this point. And, like, I've got no problem with somebody like Keenan Davis obviously trying to negotiate a better deal. That's fair enough. That's in his own interest. But as a club, right, as a team, you need to understand that the team comes first, isn't it? And there's no need to be hassling around with one player. And I don't think it is the case that Keenan Davis is trying to hold the club hostage. It's news, isn't it? It's a slow news week at the moment, isn't it? That's probably what it is. You know, not an awful lot has happened over the last few weeks in terms of important games, you know, since the Blues match. So I don't necessarily believe everything that's coming out.
Yeah, I mean, of course, Keenan Davis's contract is going to be a point of discussion, and yeah, it's going to take a while to sort out because, rightly so, he should get paid a sum of money for what he's worth. But yeah, the club's got to assess his value and find out if it's right. And if it isn't, they plan for the season. I'll put it this way. They plan for the season without thinking about Keenan Davis. I was thinking Ross McCormack, Gabby Barnhorst, Scott Hogan and Jonathan Codger. Keenan Davis come through and he broke through. That's great. But I'd do just as well without him.
Yeah, well, there's no point panicking, is there? Look how many, you just named all of those strikers. How many Championship goals you know, exist between our strike force?
Oh, hopefully enough to get us promoted, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people see that story and go, oh, it's gone to Davis's head. That's not the case at all. I think, you know, if you're playing well, you start that discussion, don't you? You'd be out of your mind to not start that discussion, wouldn't you? You know, if you think you're worth more money than you are, you got to get paid. And if it takes to the end of the season, yeah, that's fine. But the story's broke out. It's been cold water thrown on it. But people shouldn't be gunning for Davis like they did for Hepburn Murphy. That was a completely different situation. Whereas one kid hasn't played much for the first team and neither has.
No, definitely. The Hepburn Murphy situation was almost a bit of... And I've got... I'm not saying that there's anything to take away from Hepburn Murphy over here. He's a good yeah. player, and hopefully he does break through for us. But the Hepburn Murphy situation was more of a Twitter overreaction, wasn't it? Let's be honest.
It was embarrassing on all accounts.
It was, wasn't it? It was finding reasons to have a go at Bruce, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Hepburn Murphy probably shouldn't have got as much as he ended up getting. People shouldn't be harassing a young player based on a contract. And C, Aston Villa probably shouldn't be even giving out contracts to people who haven't played a first team game in 2 years.
No, exactly.
So, what I'll say is if Davis gets paid, that's fine. If he doesn't, that's fine. Because Villa will sort it out. If he's the best man for the team, and I believe he is, then that'll sort it out. So, yeah, no problem with that. Going on forward then from Preston, did it live up to expectations? I mean, you did say 4-0, but we'll take the 2-0, right?
Yeah, we'll take...
We won't be unhappy with that.
No, we won't be unhappy with it. I'm not one for moaning, you know I'm not. But
nah.
I think sometimes I do look at the team and just wonder whether there's a little bit more hunger left in them. And quite easily, if it wasn't Preston, if we'd have taken that lead, we did put the handbrake on just a little bit. Yeah, Preston didn't punish us, and there was no way they were going to. It didn't look like they were going to anyway. But another side would have come back at us and punished us for that. We did the same thing after we went up, right? We sat back and I know it's all about the winning and it's about getting those 3 points. I'm not trying to act like a Manchester United fan over here and talk about boring football, but it's just the fundamental thing that seems to be happening with us in every single game. Score the goal, sit back and just kind of hope for things to sort themselves out over the course of 90 minutes. What happened was we were that much stronger than Preston, and Preston's defence was that dire, like stripped to the absolute bare bone, that we managed to get a 2-0 victory. And I'm telling you right now, James, if that was Wolverhampton Wanderers, if that was another side, that game would have been 4 or 5-0. Brentford scored 3 goals against them on the weekend, and that was a stronger defence that they had then.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but then again, it's Aston Villa. We never live up to expectations much, and I think we do take the victory there. Moving on then, Sheffield Wednesday, we both predicted a victory in this game. That's exactly the opposite of what happened. And it could have happened worse, could it, Daniel? It couldn't have happened any worse. A goal from Adam Reach within 18 seconds against Villa. And you can talk at length about the effort if you want.
Yeah, what can you do about it? Like, all I got to say is, you know, flipping well done to you, Adam Reach. What a strike that was. It was absolutely beautiful. It was beautiful, right? You don't see those kinds of deliveries struck. You don't see those kinds of goals. Maybe you see them once or twice a season, and I'm talking all throughout the Premier League and the Championship in terms of the football, which is shown on television. But you know, that was quite an effort,
mate. Absolute screamer. Sam Johnstone clearly wasn't expecting it. He'll learn from that, surely. I mean, he's not going to save it anyway, but at least being in the position next time would go a little bit long way. But yeah, you know, I can't fault him for not thinking, oh, I'm not going to get shot at within 10 seconds of the game. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's in. John Terry was fouled in the build-up. The referee on the day was piss poor, but those things happen. It's football. We've grown to expect that, you know, there's human error involved. We have to take it on the chin. And that doesn't take away from that absolute stupendous effort from Adam Reach. 18 seconds in. Perfectly placed. Fast as hell. Powerful as hell. Straight in the top corner. Game over from
that
point,
right?
The
funny thing about that as well was that it dipped, right? It dipped and it still went into the top corner. It's not like it was shot in a straight trajectory, was it? It dipped into the top corner. I don't even know how that's possible. I'm pretty sure I need to get the physics book out for that. But it was a hell of a strike. But yeah, it shouldn't have been game over, if I'm totally honest with you. What I will say, if we're making excuses, is that there were obviously a lot of guys out injured, and so it was an uphill battle. But what that should have done was spurred the players on to really sort of make Sheffield Wednesday struggle. But that's not what happened, right? What I saw, especially from the highlights, if you look back, every single time the defence was... Every single time the defence was pushed on by Sheffield Wednesday, they just seemed to panic, and you know, we just weren't up for their fast pace of football. They controlled the game, and it just never looked like we were gonna get back into it.
It sounds stupid, Daniel, but if someone scores in the first 18 seconds against you, surely it seems like it's harder for them almost, because there's 89 minutes and 42 seconds where they've got to defend a lead for, and defending a lead it's a difficult position. You don't want to be in that position because it throws the tactics out the window. But for some reason, it shouldn't be game over. It should be an impetus for Villa to go, okay, free goal. We've got a whole game to play. That whole game, we've just got a handicap of -1. No, we've just got to go for it.
If that was us, Steve Bruce would have taken off Davis and brought on another defender. Gone 5 at the back. probably what would have happened.
Yeah, I mean, you put Davis straight at centre back, I think. I mean, you know, it's the opposite of what happened with Samba. We'll get into what happened with Samba actually later. But when someone scores a goal like that against you, A, sometimes there's nothing you can do. But B, it should be an impetus to get your sea legs under you and go for it. And Villa didn't do that at all. They actually looked shell shocked. And part of that is because their best players were clearly unfit. John Terry was struggling throughout the game. Robert Snodgrass was playing with 2 broken ribs, if I understand correctly, and he had to be taken off. So 2 injuries in the first half. The first one we'll come on to is quite a shocking injury for John Terry. Broken metatarsal is believed, as of recording, believed to be, which is a 6 to 12 week injury.
Yeah, it's really bad, isn't it? Because our defensive effort has been very, very good over the last. Over the last few games. In fact, I'd even say, go as far as saying, you know, consistently over the last 2 months, our defensive efforts have been fantastic. That partnership of Chester and Terry is now upset, right? And now we need to find another partner. And I'm not sure who that partner is going to be for James Chester, which is obviously something which we should be able to deal with looking at our squad. But I hate to say I told you so, right? This is why we needed squad rotation. This is why we needed to give game time to other players, and now we're going to struggle for it without our captain and without, you know, the best player in our team being available for us. And you don't know how long he's going to be out for if something's broken, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have a little interval here speaking about centre-backs, I feel, because it needs to be said. A lot of people say, oh, we shouldn't. This is why you don't sell Nathan Baker. But the fact is Nathan Baker has to leave because we signed John Terry. We weren't going to play 3 at the back, which would have been a brilliant idea if we had, you know, if we wanted to and had Nathan Baker, James Chester and John Terry. But we didn't do that, and thus Baker has to leave. You can't stop him. But the issue is now that we have an ageing centre-back who is out with an injury, which could be a career ender at his age. We don't know, but we also don't know how fast he'll recover from it, because he has shown that he's a freak of fitness.
No, you know, that's it. And I think Chelsea's medical staff are very, very well known for being absolutely on point, aren't they? And they know what they're doing. You know, maybe what we need to do is get Eva Caniera back. You know, she knows John Terry. Bring her in till the end of the season. See if we can get him fit again. But no, you know, I think what worries me now is that you say we've got an aging centre-back out. Now we've got Chris Samba who's got to come back in. And I do honestly wonder whether he's going to be... I mean, in fact, it's not just Chris Samba. I'm looking at all our centre-backs. They're all aging. Chris Samba, Tommy Elphick, and also Micah Richards as well. Are any of those players going to be fit enough or even... you know, prepared enough to be able to come in and play competitive football for us? No one to the degree of John Terry.
Micah Richards, I believe, is out with a chronic injury. It's gone under the radar a bit, but I've seen John Percy of the Telegraph report on it a few times. I've seen the BBC say it as well. And Football 365, I don't know what his chronic injury is, but there's a reason he hasn't been in the team, and it's not that he's an arsehole. It's the fact that, you know, he is suffering from a serious injury, whatever it may be. Because I haven't even seen him in any of the team footage, you know, the videos they have. You know, he's completely disappeared from the training camp. As for Chris Samba, Chris Samba will go on to later more about his performance, but he did settle into the game quite well despite being at fault for their second goal. He did become, you know, quite a weapon at the back. He was winning every ball, and he was moved up front later on. But when the ball is played on the floor, he's got no chance at all, and that's not any fault of his. It's just that it's Chris Samba. You know, he doesn't have the legs he used to have. He's a massive threat. He's been a world-class centre-back in the back, but it's age catches up with
you. Yeah, but you know what? This is why we need to concentrate on obviously being a strong side from the air. If we're gonna have the sort of defenders which might get paced out, that's fine. But we need to then obviously have a more physical style of play. And I think our style of play does suit having those kinds of defenders, which is fair enough. Because John Terry's not exactly the fastest either. I mean, I don't know how many times John Terry's, you know, stopped a pacey forward who's broken through the defence. You know, that's nothing to say he's a bad defender. It's just what he's used to. And, you know, what I find funny about the whole Nathan Baker situation, right, and people getting upset that we sold Nathan Baker, what people seem to forget is that, I mean, even with Kieran Clark as well, what people seem to forget is that, you know, whilst, I mean, I'll call it the Lambert era, during the Lambert era, you know, during the era in which we got relegated and obviously, you know, the bad years that we had, our defence has been an absolute liability. And Nathan Baker was a part of that, right? Fantastic, you know, with the ball in the air. But when it comes to, you know, defending on the ground, got absolutely ripped for it. So you tell me what Chris Samba has. I mean, do you tell me what Nathan Baker has that Chris Samba doesn't? Because Chris Samba is one of the strongest players we have in the air. And that's why he gets put on up front.
Yeah, because he wins the ball and he does it in defence, but it's just when he's getting, you know, when there's Barry Bannum, Jordan Rhodes and Adam Reach around him, pinging passes around him, he can't do anything. But no, there's not many defenders in the world who are that mobile, who can, you know, disrupt a triangle passing movement around them. We've also got Tommy Alfick to worry about. Would he slot in straight at centre-back for you, or is he a non-factor in this?
You know the thing is, I know who I'd pick at centre back, and I'm not sure you'll be prepared for my answer or whether you'll dislike.
I know
it.
What you're gonna say. I think. Are you gonna say Asa Solomon?
Nah, but I mean, fair
enough.
You're
not gonna say Asa Solomon.
I'm not gonna do that, right? I'm not gonna say give it to a kid, right? Maybe give Asa Solomon a game. I mean, heck, this is the thing. This is what I was saying. What I was saying about obviously giving players game time, because otherwise they're not gonna be prepared for it. You know, in fact, we may as well play him because he's going to have the same issue that...
This is a genuinely good centre-back as
well.
Yeah,
no, exactly.
You know, we've...
Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it. He scores from set pieces. He's an aerial threat. He's strong. He's fast. He's mobile. And what's more, Neil Taylor was the first British-Asian player to play for Villa, but Asa Solomon will go a long way for representation and the fact that he'll be the first Islamic player to play for Aston Villa, and I think that's amazing. Well, not the first Islamic player, because we've had Kodja. But we've had the first British Islamic player, and that's amazing. And, you know, he's not just a token player. He's an incredible athlete. He's an incredible footballer. And it's time to bring these players through like we did with Davies.
And also the thing with Asa Solomon is he's got a left foot on him as well, so he can fill in at left back. Right, so Alan Hutton... You know, you haven't just got Neil Taylor breathing down your neck. You got Issa Solomon there as well. And yeah, no, he's a good player, and he's also a leader. I believe he's captained the reserves. I'm not 100% sure, but obviously he's played for various England youth teams as well. But what I was gonna say was I'd prefer somebody like Richie DeLate to come in than Tommy Elphick.
That's not a surprise.
What I see from Tommy Elphick is a player who has actually been broken confidence wise. He's barely played this season, and I just can't see him coming in and doing well for us. Our team seems to run on confidence and motivation. You know, we see that players who've been left out the side for a long time never seem to make it back in the team, never seem to have that second wind in them, their second life. I reckon Richie DeLate is the kind of man we need to bring in right now anyway. He's mobile, he's good with his feet, and he's good in the air. I think he's the guy that we need alongside James Chester, if I'm totally honest with you.
Yeah, I mean... We've got a lot of problems with depth in the fact that we don't use our players. I mean, Al Mohammadi's been a constant starter. We've had Alan Hutton dipping in and out of the team. Snodgrass has kept it down. Adom has kept it down. Kodra and Davies have constantly started. But when a player loses their slot in the team, they're done. Bakuna lost his slot on the first game of the season, was shipped out instantly. Lansbury lost it after injury. He's disappeared. You know, they never seem to come. We never seem to do any rotation. And we're paying the price for it now. Snodgrass broke his ribs. And Onoma's out. John Terry's broke his foot. It's only a matter of time before Al Mohammadi slips him an injury. Davis is knackered. And Bruce has admitted that Davis has been carrying injuries while been playing him. We need to learn these lessons quick. Otherwise
what a
we're
silly
get
thing
ruined.
To admit as well. What an absolutely silly thing to admit. You're gonna take on the next side, or maybe after the international break. I don't know exactly who it is, right?
QPR.
All right, that's fair enough. They're just a bunch of overpaid players, aren't they? At this point, I don't know. I'm not 100% sure what QPR are like at this point. There's no point saying that kind of thing, is there? But it is a problem, and I got to hammerheads with quite a few people on Twitter this week by saying, "Look, this is why we need rotation." And what I do here is why change a winning team, right? But a winning team is no longer going to be a winning team if they're forced to make changes, and you know the lads who step in haven't had game time and aren't prepared for playing competitive football, right? You always need to have those options available, and in fact, right, to some degree, right, you need to be ready to change your team up depending on the opposition, regardless of whether there's injuries or not, right? You need to be able to play different sides with different systems and play different players in different positions depending on who's out injured for the other side, for example, right? And we haven't seen that at all from Villa. The only time that Steve Bruce has actually made changes is when he's put out a poor side and he's been forced to replace the players.
Yeah, there's problems with us. Look, we go a lot on about Bruce out, Bruce in and all that, and it's just winning matches is absolutely brilliant and it's wise there, but it's also about correct use of resource. And the fact is that we are seeing players now pick up injuries and then get played within said injuries. Robert Snodgrass should never have started yesterday's game if he had two broken ribs, like he's reported. Why would you start a player with two broken ribs? That's absolutely otherworldly levels of insane.
Yeah, exactly.
And you aggravate these injuries, two broken ribs turns into, God forbid, a punctured lung or something like that. You know, you've got problems. You've got serious problems.
The issue we have there is, right, so who do you play instead of him? Green's injured. Grealish is injured. Yeah, we know he's back in training, but yeah, this goes in the same way. You don't just start a player as soon as they've come back and expect them to play 90 minutes. There's no, who else do you play on that right-hand side?
Well, maybe you have to adjust the formation, I guess. You know, you have to either use the personnel you've got for your system or slightly adapt or tweak your system to suit the personnel you have. You know, it's good management. And Steve Bruce, I mean, I think he's a good manager when everything's fallen into place for him. But now we're going to see things not go his way. And this will be the true test of his time at Aston Villa coming up.
Well, this will be the test of our mettle now, right? And obviously it happens. Right, throughout a season, you're gonna get challenges. It's never gonna go all hunky dory throughout the whole, you know, 9 or 10 months of football that we do get to see. It's not a reason for us to panic, right? We've still got a good record at this point. We didn't get thrashed by Sheffield Wednesday. We lost 2-1, right? There's still a good basis for us to build on over here. And what we do have to remember is that we had a massive, massive shake-up this week in terms of all those injuries. We've got the international break. Perhaps that's going to help us a little bit. Perhaps some of these players are going to come back. You know, perhaps Snodgrass will be fully fit by the time it's over, and we'll be able to run with it again. But do you know what? Right, if this means that players like Issa Suleiman, like you say, or guys like Callum O'Hare get more experience and get more of a run out, this might seem to help us in the long term, especially coming towards the final few months of the season. You know, we're going to need these kinds of guys in the team.
Yeah, big issues that seem to be hanging around Aston Villa at the moment in regards to fitness, injuries and squad selection. We stuck with the same team for a long time, didn't we? And I think we've run into issues because of that. John Terry mainly, you know, out for God knows long. But as I'll say now, if Aston Villa struggle because they are missing John Terry, do they actually deserve to be in a promotion hunt? I mean, if one player sinks your promotion hunt, the centre-back, you know, that's on us, isn't it? That's a problem of our own making and no one else's.
I don't think that we'd mess up on the basis of John Terry not being there, right? I think we've got to give a lot of plaudits to James Chester, right? There's been a lot of times this season when we've seen something happen in the defence and you automatically assume it's John Terry, and the camera zooms in and you see the back of his shirt and you realise it's James Chester who's done the defensive work over there, right? He's done fantastically as well, right? Let's not forget. Yeah. The problem is going to be finding that other defender, that new guy who steps in, right, and steps up to the plate and puts in proper performances, right? What we've lacked is leadership, but I do think we have more leaders on the pitch now. Perhaps with that being said and done, you know, we might be able to have somebody in for John Terry who does a good job. And you know what? Maybe that man is Chris Samba. You know, I haven't seen Chris Samba put in a bad performance just yet. Okay, I know he has made a couple of errors, right, which have obviously kind of, you know, led to goals. But the thing I will say with him is that he does play with passion, and for the most part, he does seem to do well for us when he does play.
Yeah, and I mean, Samba yesterday, he has played up front. I think the first game of the season was weird when we put Samba up front. You know, it seemed a desperate move, especially in a 1-1. But yesterday it made a bit of sense. And, you know, I can't take that away from Steve Bruce because he was a handful. But he was bundling into people, winning foul, you know, fouling people up front. And he got a goal. You know, you can't argue if that's vindicated the decision. The decision's right. If Samba, you put Samba up front to score a goal and he scores a goal, and you're all good on
him. Yeah, listen, man. You know, the thing with him is that we brought him on because we needed guys up in the air. I mean, this is one of the issues that we have had. You know, we don't have a big man up front. We sold Gestede, never replaced him. Brought in, I think we were talking before we went on air. You know, we had Scott Hogan brought in last January. Was it January? I can't remember. Yeah, it was January.
Yeah, we brought him basically only almost a year ago. He's been here.
Oh right, okay.
Only yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
So January 2017, we bought him. So
yeah, that was it.
Just about 10 months ago or so.
That was it. We brought him in, and it didn't make much sense, but. You know, this is the thing. Maybe Samba will score a couple of goals for us. You got to remember, I once sat down and watched Crystal Palace take on Wolves in a cup game, and Danny Butterfield scored a hat trick for them, and he was a fullback, right? Maybe Chris Samba's going to be scoring the goals for us up front. You never know. Maybe the answer is to stick Alan Hutton up there when we're missing somebody. Yeah, that's maybe that's his new role now. But if I'm totally serious, him being brought on as a striker did seem a bit weird to me and just a bit desperate. You shouldn't have to be relying on him to do it. He did score a goal, though, so what can I say?
Yeah, exactly. The decision's been proven to be right, I guess, if he does what he's there for. We wrapped up that Sheffield Wednesday game. We wrapped up Preston. Big story broke today. That Aston Villa... No, I say big story. The truth of this, we're not sure, because it is the Sun. You know what I mean? You know, like... There could be truth to what they're saying, there couldn't be, but they claim that 4 first-team players have been transfer-listed by Aston Villa.
What's the actual headline? What's the actual headline that they've gone with?
Steve Bruce plotting to sell 4 first-team players.
I love that.
So, yeah, but it's not like a plot. He's told them. It's not a secret. It's not a secret. But if it's true, it means that Henry Lansbury... Not a surprise. James Bree, big surprise. Scott Hogan, not a surprise. And Jack Grealish is the big one. That's an incredible move if we sell Jack Grealish. Could be sold. Bruce wants to raise transfer money because he wants to buy players. What do you think of this? I mean, we should be... Henry Lansbury probably could go. Scott Hogan probably could go. But James Bree and Jack Grealish, incredible decisions to let them leave.
Yeah, you say decisions, but like, how much truth is in it, right? Grealish gets linked away every single... Yeah, I mean, he gets linked away every single window. I'm not sure how much truth is in it, right? But Grealish is injured. He's not played a single game this season, right? So,
but he did come back yesterday. Sorry, I know not many people saw it on the highlights, but he come back for 10 minutes yesterday and was, or he was decent. He was decent, but yeah. Apart from that, he hasn't played a game
course,
this season.
But, you know, this is it. I'm not going to count those last 10 minutes when we're down 2-0. It's as if he's going to be able to show his creative spark at, you know, at that point.
Yeah,
you know, and I think that's just somebody being lazy, isn't it? It's lazy journalism. Oh, look, Jack Grealish is barely played for Villa this season, not understanding that he's been injured all season. Right, you've got also Henry Lansbury. He's another player. I believe he has been injured, hasn't he, for part of the season.
He has been injured, yes, but has Henry Lansbury ever looked decent for Villa? as well, which is a big question.
Probably not. I mean, that is a fair point. But the other thing with Lansbury is perhaps he needs somebody like Whelan or Jedinak alongside him. You know, Hourihane and Lansbury together in midfield, if we're playing 4-4-2, the two of them together is not going to work, right? Perhaps he needs a little bit more of a chance. But if we're going to replace him, then, you know, who are we going to replace him with? Is it going to be an attacking midfielder? Is it going to be a central midfielder who's going to drive us forward? I mean, there's a couple of names in the Premier League I'd look at, certainly. But then, who's the other one? Scott Hogan. That one makes sense to me. He's not performed well for us. It's not that he's a poor player. He's a good player. He's incredibly fast. But he just doesn't suit us.
Not working. Just not working. For whatever reason, it's just not working. He can't get a goal. And it's no fault of his own. He's just not up. It's just no way it's working.
And I think the other thing with him is don't we usually only have him on in cup games and say games where we're actually on a bad run of form? I mean,
He grabbed his second or third start of the season. Yes, he started for us alongside Davies yesterday. But he did look good. Like, I will admit, he pressed. He tried to win balls. He did make chances. But he's not going to start over Codger or Davies.
No, I suppose.
It's just difficult.
I don't know what sort of system we could play to accommodate him. You know, the way that we play.
We'd have to have
four. Yeah, it's not just that. But, you know, what we have to understand and what we have to settle with is that we do play long ball, right? I'm not going to sit here and criticise it, but we do play long ball, right? And unless you've got a big man up there alongside Scott Hogan, it's never going to work. And he's not the striker we needed to sign when we signed him. You know, we needed somebody bigger. We needed somebody who was going to be a danger in the box. And unfortunately, we since January at least, we've been stuck with four or five strikers who do pretty much the same sort of job. And it's a shame, really, because, I don't know. I'm just looking at the guys that we have in McCormack and Hogan and just think that there's a lot of potential in there to be banging in goals because they've always done it in the past for other teams.
What is really strange is that we buy Ross McCormack, Scott Hogan for 12, 15 million, and then we moan the season after that we are now restricted by financial fair play. You know, we saw this. It didn't come out of nowhere. This situation did not come out of nowhere, this financial fair play situation, Daniel. And we've made this by buying Henry Lansbury, by buying Jamesbury, by buying Scott Hogan. No, we don't have to, now. We're in a position where we are looking to sell these players, if true, and that's sad. It's a sad state that we've put ourselves in.
No, but it shouldn't be, should it? Yeah, you've got to persist. You've got to persist. Like, bringing in talented players is not going to it's change everything straight away. Exactly right. The club was rotten to the core. Right, it needed time. It needs time for these players to settle in and start doing a job. Right, Ross McCormack, obviously. You know, he's a player that plays on confidence. He looks a lot like Wayne Rooney at times in that he gets frustrated when there's games that we go and we're not doing well. But that's not just his fault. That's the rest of the team around him not pulling their socks up. I'd love to see Ross McCormack get thrown back into this side now where we are scoring goals and where we have got some creativity going, right? Have we seen Ross McCormack play alongside Snodgrass and the Doma on either side? We haven't, you know. We saw him last season when we had a serious lack of playmakers, right? We ended up playing Gabby on the wing a lot of games, if I remember as well. And we need to persist with him a little bit more. I almost feel like Steve Bruce makes decisions at times which are almost aiming to gain him popularity rather than considering the needs of the players and the squad around him. As far as Henry Lansbury goes, he's a kind of player which has gone missing. I'll give him that. But the answer to all this is not to just start selling them all straight away. We had good midfielders before. We sold them. And I am, of course, talking about Gay and Vertu. Obviously, we've had to take a step down, so that's something there. But you know, when it comes to players like Jamesbury and it comes to you spending that kind of money on them, you got to look at them as an investment. You got to see what they can do in the years to come. You can't just get rid of them and give up on them right away.
No, of course not. Of course not. But yeah, we have come to the start of another international break. So international football will take over for a week or so now. And that means we wrap up another chapter of an Aston Villa season, Daniel. And so what I'm going to ask you to do is please award your player of the month, your player of the chapter even, of for October and these last two matches.
Ooh, that's a good one. What, the last two matches? Okay.
The month involving the last two matches, sorry. So October through November.
I'm going to give it Keenan Davis. I'm absolutely going to give it to him because he stepped up to the plate, hasn't he? Right, he started scoring goals, and when Jonathan Codger hasn't been performing, he's been there, right? And what he's given us is an absolute focal point up front. It means that the players around him are suddenly lighting up a little bit. Adoma and Snodgrass have something to aim at, and they've got something to move forward with. And I just feel as though a young player like him coming into the team and having the sort of effect that he has done, and basically doing better than Codger, obviously, this season because of his injury, but also better than the likes of Ross McCormack, Gabby Egbon-Lahore, and Scott Hogan in terms of making an impact. And there's no one else really I can see who I can give this to other than him.
Fair enough. Any runner-up? Anyone who come close? I don't know. You said there's no one else you could see, but
no. I think Terry's had a very good month as well. But I almost feel like it's a cheat giving it to him. I think our defense has looked good this month. I will say that. I know there's been games where we have conceded goals, but I think we could have conceded a lot more. I think that defensively we've looked incredibly strong, right? And you know, especially in games where we've had to sit back and had to soak up a lot of pressure. John Terry's come to our aid so many times, and we've looked fantastic in terms of, you know, one problem that we've had over the last few seasons is that we've been awful in terms of conceding set pieces and not being able to deal with balls coming into the box. But he's done an incredible job this month, and I'm going to give it to him. Unfortunately, he's going to be off for a while, so I won't be able to give it to him for a few months.
Oh yeah, man. So yeah, our other award we have on the Hulkcast is the Must Do Better. Previously, it went to Alan Hutton, that type of player. Who would you give it to? This, I mean, it is like the worst award to give. But who is your Must Do Better for the last month?
Oh, this feels mean, man. Oh,
well, you have to do it. We gave it to Glenn Whelan last month, and he did all right until yesterday.
I was thinking about Glenn Whelan as well. I was thinking.
Yeah, you can give it him again if you want. Like, I hope he doesn't listen, otherwise he'll get quite upset. But, you know, he has been playing pretty shit sometimes, so yeah, you know, he'll know
I'm
that.
I'm going to give it Codger. I'm going to give it Jonathan Codger. I'm not sure how...
No, he's been out. He's been out injured. That's really unfair. When you've come here, yeah, and you've said, you know, this sounds mean. You give the award Must Do Better to a player who's out injured.
Like, the way he got himself injured again was just silly, right? He overexerted himself. But by not using the players around him. I'm going to say the same thing I've said to Jonathan Codger for ages, right? The guy's great, right? He knows how to score goals. He knows where the net is. But he needs to start, you know, being a little bit more aware of the players around him. And I think we need to start attacking more as a unit. That's one thing we've lacked. I think now with Snodgrass and Adoma on the wing playing well again, and obviously with Davis being new in the side, it does look like we're finally starting to get something going. But I'd like to see Jonathan Codger be a little bit less selfish in the next few weeks or so. You know, maybe start getting the assists going before he starts scoring the goals. There was a lot of times over the last few games where he's messed up a lot of our attacks.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, he's clearly he goes on sprints for half the pitch, and that's why he gets injured, because he does do too much work. And yeah, share the workload, do a Keenan Davis, you know, pass off over to people, make your movements off the ball, make the goals happen for your movement. Don't necessarily force something through. I fully agree with that. I think you've explained that very well, Daniel. So, you know, you were digging your grave at the start, giving it to an injured player, but I think you've bounced back very well from that. Bounced back very well, like I hope Villa do in the next couple of matches after the international break. So we've got QPR and some of Sunderland coming up. Pointless previewing those, but those are two teams Villa should beat. So yeah, we'll come back to that after those games. But I think Villa, that's 6 points surely. But then again, we said that this last time, didn't we? And we got beat by Sheffield Wednesday, Daniel. Any final thoughts, mate?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, we need to not overreact. That's it. You know, last night we took an L, but we will bounce back, right? You know, in the words of Big Sean, right? That's what I'm going to say. We've got a good squad around us, and what we need to do now is basically put a little bit more confidence in those players who are going to be coming in. You know, we saw a lot of people saying we cannot change a winning team. We don't want these guys coming in, and I think we need to stop putting too much blame on a lot of these guys. A lot of them haven't had a lot of game time, but now we're going to see a little bit more from them. Hopefully Chris Samba steps up to the plate. Hopefully Callum O'Hare gets some game time now as well. You know, all these injuries have put us in a little bit of a bad place, but we can't overreact about it. That's the reason we have a squad. That's the reason why squads are full of 24 to 25 players and not just 11. And that's all I'll say, really. I think we're going to see some new faces, and maybe somebody else is going to kick in some form. Hopefully Jack Grealish as well comes back. That's something to look forward to.
Yeah, I mean, we had a question about fitting Jack Grealish in, and it's hurting my fucking head, to be honest, thinking about how we sort the team. I don't want to play as us in Football Manager, mate. I don't want to...
No, replace on them.
Yeah, I know, but it's just there's just so many. You know, I can sense the arguments coming in Football Manager about all the players being pissed off with me because I'm not picking them. But there's just too many players. There's so many players, mate. So many players that we have. And Villa really, you know, final wrap up. Villa need to find their identity now about John Terry, and that'd be the big story going forward. And yeah, that's it from us, I think. Villa, very much without their identity and their leader, need to find out who they are. And hopefully it's who they are turns in a few points come winter. But yeah, where can we find your work again, Daniel Ryder, for the listeners?
Yeah, okay, sure. I mean, just to reply to you there, man, first of all, like, yeah, I mean, find ourselves, right? I thought we were having a gap year in the Championship. We seem to be having two gap years in the Championship now, man. Maybe that's what finding ourselves all about. But if you do want to find my work, it is available on Twitter at DHRaza. I do put most of my links up there. And of course, you can tune in to me every Saturday morning on Sports Talk on British Muslim TV.
Perfect. Yeah, make sure to tune into that. Daniel has been enjoying his broadcasting work lately. But yeah, please leave us a review. You can, at us on Twitter, mention us on Twitter, or you can find us on Apple Podcasts or anything. Reviews do help. You know, that feedback does help us because, you know, we know what to discuss and we know what to talk about and we know what to include. But yeah, as for me, James Rushton at Gemma Rushton on Twitter and Daniel Raza, that's it today. We'll be back with Hulkcast 120 in the international break. Catch you later. Goodbye.